ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Canto 4, Chapter 28, titled as Puranjana Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, verse number 34. Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Vaitarbhi Madhirekshana
Vaitarbhi Madhirekshana
Anvadhavata Pandyesham
Anvadhavata
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Vaidarbhi Madhirekshana
Vaidarbhi Madhirekshana
Anvadhavata Pandyesham
Anvadhavata Pandyesham
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan
Vaidarbhi Madhirekshana
Vaidarbhi Madhirekshana
Anvadhavata Pandyesham
Anvadhavata Pandyesham
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Jyotsneva Rajanikaram
Hitva,
Hitva
Giving up
Giving up
Grihan
Grihan
Home
Oh.
Sutan,
Sutan,
children,
children.
Bhogan,
Bhogan,
material happiness,
happiness.
Vaidarbhi,
Vaidarbhi,
the daughter of King Vidarbha,
Madhirekshana,
with enchanting eyes,
with enchanting eyes.
Anvadhavata,
Anvadhavata,
followed,
followed.
Pandya Isham,
Pandya Isham,
King Malayadhvaja.
Himalaya
Jyotsna Iva
Like the moonshine
Rajanikaram
Rajanikaram
The moon. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Translation Just as the moonshine follows the moon at night Immediately after King Malayadhvaja appeared for Kulachala His devoted wife whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homeliness, despite family and children. Just as in the Vanaprastha stage, the wife follows the husband, similarly when the spiritual master retires for Nirjana Bhajana, some of his advanced devotees follow him and engage in his personal service. In other words, those who are very fond of family life come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by society, friendship and love. A verse by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura in his Guru Ashtakam is significant in this regard. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadah. A disciple should always remember that by serving the spiritual master, he can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. All the scriptures recommend that it is by pleasing the spiritual master and serving him directly that one can attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service. The word Madhirekshana is also significant in this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained in his Sandarbha that the word Madhira means intoxicating. If one's eyes become intoxicated upon seeing the deity, he may be called Madhirekshana. Queen Vaidarbhi's eyes were very enchanting. Just as one's eyes are Madhirekshana when engaged in seeing the temple deity, unless one is advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. Om Ajnana Tibirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya
Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Svapalantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnava Vamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sadevam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhamritamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kancha Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yontah Pravishya Mama Vacham Imam Prasuktam Sanjeeva Yatyakhila Shakti Dharasvadhamna Anyamscha Hasta Charana Shravanatva Gadin Pranan Namo Bhagavate Purushaya Tubhyam Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudhiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Ruttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishthiti Hare Krishna.
Meaning of the first chant.
Sir?
Meaning of the first chant.
First chant?
Just like few
shlokas
before.
First
shloka. It is the first prayer of Dhruva Maharaj to the Lord. So you can see it in Dhruva's prayers. Which is your name. So when he sees the Lord, that is the thing that he says. That everything is activated by your mercy. So the speech. So we can see, I'll repeat the translation again. Just as the moonshine follows the moon at night, immediately after King Malayadhvaja departed for Kulachala, his devoted wife, whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homely happiness despite family and children. We can see many themes behind that is apparent in this verse, and we can see how Prabhupada actually churns it and tries to pick out the strands from this verse. We can see that there is an able king, Malayadhvaja. There is an able husband. There is a good couple. There is a very chaste wife behind. And we also see how Prabhupada takes us to a different level to say there is a guru and disciple relationship between this. And how Vedavyasa actually draws a parallel between the moon and the moonshine, that it can't be separated. Just as the moon and the moonshine cannot be separated, in the same way, the husband and wife also cannot be separated if they are devoted to Krishna. And from the same dynamics, we can see that the guru and disciple also are like that. Srila Prabhupada sometimes says, many times actually in his purports, that chastity of a woman makes one very beautiful. And then the Lord Kapila's instruction about human physiology, where he says in verse 3.31-38, Balam me pashya mayaya stri maya jaino disham yakaroti padakrantam bhruvi chambena kevalam. Prabhupada writes in the translation, Karada Muni is saying, this is Kapila Muni's instruction, just try to understand the mighty strength of my maya in the shape of a woman, who by mere movement by her eyebrows can keep the greatest conquerors of the world under her grip. And again, the same Kapila Muni says ahead in some of the verses, Yam manyate patim mohan manmayam rishabhayatim stritvam stri sangatah prapto pittapatya griha pradam. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman in this life. Foolishly, she looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. So we see how Krishna's Maya is so strange that sometimes a man thinks that he's so enchanted by his wife, and Krishna says that that woman is my Maya. And then the same man takes the form of a wife in a woman in his next life and gets enchanted by the man, by his husband. And if we come back to the story, what we are reading about Puranjana, this chapter is entitled Puranjana Becomes a Woman in His Next Life. And we know this happened because he was actually too attached to his wife. And Krishna says in the Gita, Yam Yam Vapismaran Bhavam Tyajatyante Kalevaram. So whatever one remembers at the time of death, so he shall attain in his next life. So Krishna is saying that there is a strong bond between a man and a woman, and this is very difficult to overcome in this material universe. In fact, this whole universe runs on this one concept of the attraction between a male and a female, and it's a very strong bond to get released from. And this is Krishna is saying, this is my Maya. And just as we were discussing in the few previous chapters where devotees mentioned that there is a straight path to go to Krishna, to get out of this material world, it's like a freeway. And sannyasa or a brahmachari and a sannyasa is a straight path. Sometimes due to affection towards morbid pleasures, people take exit routes. They take, let me do some recreation, and that exit route is a grihastashram. They take an exit from the freeway, and then they get engaged in some morbid pleasure. So they'll have a wife, they'll have children, they'll have grandchildren, they have relatives, and things like that. So it is imperative that the grihastha thinks that, hang on, my life's purpose is to go towards Krishna, back to Godhead. Well, I have taken an exit from the freeway, I have to get back on the freeway as soon as possible. So we can see that very quickly, the scenario here is Malayadvaja is actually entering what? He's entering into a stage of ashram called as Vanaprasthashrama. Vana means forest, prasthan means one who is moving towards the forest. So Vanaprasthashrama means one, Vanaprastha means one who is ready to get into the forest. So Malayadvaja is ready to get into the forest, but this is a story narrated by Narada Muni to whom? To King Prachina Barhisha. So this is a story, this is an allegorical story that is going on, that Narada Muni is explaining to King Prachina Barhisha. In the Vedic practice, so there are four varnas and four ashramas. There is brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa. The ultimate aim of the Vedas is to deliver us from this strong knot of material bondage. So if one is not ready or one gets too much entangled, there is certain age by which the Vedas say, hey, it is time to get out of material bondage. And that age is 51, generally in social parlance. In Hindi, it is called ikyavan. Ikya means 51. 51, Ikkyavan, that's why they say Ikkyavan is the right time to go to Vanaprastha. One. It starts with the one. So Ikkyavan, they say. Now, what's interesting is, this was the time when people used to live 100 years. So the first 50 years they enjoy their life with whatever they have to do in the first, as a childhood, as a teenager, and then get into Grihasthashrama when they are 20, 25, and the next 25, he will go to work, raise a family, bring some human forms of life into his being by having children. And then by when he's 51, he has to snap it and just say, now I have to focus my whole second part of my life on spiritual progress and spiritual consciousness. But what's interesting is hardly people live these days to 200 years. So the concept of the second half of the life, which is starting from 51 itself, is a misnomer. So people rarely live these days up to 60, maybe 70 to the max, if their body is quite fit. So 70 divided by 2 is 35. So Arikyavan should ideally start from 35. And I'm 44, so I should actually be in the forest by now. So there was a system. This is just to enthuse, because generally when people get enthused in a family life, what happens is they start depending on these material pursuits. So as soon as one is enchanted by a beautiful wife, he starts getting attracted to her. And then what happens is, a product of that attraction, we have children. And when children come out, Prabhupada writes in his small book, Civilization and Transcendence, that the children speaking so sweet words is so nice that the parents will see, oh, such a nice child, oh, he is my child. And then unknowingly there is a complete dependence on that child. And thereby getting more entangled in the attachment of mind. And that is why this is a very hard knot to come out of. And by the time someone realizes, the body is old. The body, the mind is strong. When we are young, the mind is not strong, the body is strong. But there is a difficulty to bring the mind into Krishna. But when we get old, the body is not strong, the mind wants to do something, but the body doesn't cooperate. You know, so that's why Prahlad Maharaj says, Kaumaram Acharyat Prajna. So we have to start this at a very young age. So, and get to know about the prime purpose of life. So that's why it is very important that the Shastras say that this false dependence on Griha, Sutta, Vritti is very difficult, because we should not, these are secondary dependences, or these are false dependences. So that is why Prabhupada writes in the purport that those who are very fond of family life should come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by the society, friendship and love. Because this happiness expands, because then I think I've been born in a good country, I'm an Australian, I'm an American, so I'm in a rich country, I have a nice culture and all of this. These are false dependencies, and these are all expansions of the body. So this is not a true identity. So Prabhupada is saying we have to take this as an awareness, and one should get out of this false dependence. But we see in today's parlance, what is the retirement plan these days? The retirement plan is, let's retire nicely. I had colleagues who retired from their work, and they bought a nice resort out in the countryside. They have horses, they go horse riding, and then they tour the world, and they want to see the world with their aging wives, sometimes with their children, sometimes with their grandchildren, and see nature and see a lot of places. But one realizes that, so it's very difficult that one who is accustomed in his grihastha life to depend on these false dependencies, it is very difficult for him at an advanced age to get out of it. Because he's so entangled in it during his grihastha life, when he comes of the age to get out and start doing spiritual practice, it's very difficult, because he's accustomed to comforts. He cannot stay if it's too hot, he cannot stay if it's too cold, he needs a heater, he needs a nice bungalow, he needs a nice view, he can't chant until there is quietness, and all of these concoctions, because he's accustomed to it. So I've heard from my teachers that one must practice to live in improvised poverty. One must practice to live in improvised poverty at a very beginning of his life. If one lives like that, at the end stages, because Vanaprastha, if we see, the Shastras say that the life of a Vanaprastha means you have to go and live in a forest. Well, you hardly find forest these days. You have forest reserves, but no forest. So you have to live in a forest. And ideally, a Vanaprastha does not cook. He doesn't cook. He doesn't spend his time cooking, actually. If you really see, there are... So, in the Vedic parlance, there are Agnikas and Niragnikas. Niragnikas means one who doesn't have anything to do with the fire, like the sannyasis, like the Vanaprasthas. The other two ashramas, was Brahmachari and Grihastha, they are Agnikas, means they have something to do with the Agni. Grihasthas cook, Brahmacharis ideally don't cook, but they also assist the spiritual master in the yagyas. And so when you take Vanaprastha and Sannyasa, you actually shouldn't cook. But if, as a Grihastha, I'm accustomed to, you know, eating pizzas, pasta, basil, you know, rosemary, thyme, etc., etc. And I have all these opulences during my Grihastha life. And during Vanaprastha, I'll say I'm in the forest. Can I smell some thyme somewhere in the forest? You might just get eucalyptus trees, just they're like the koala bear, and you'd have to just stick with it. But if it's not being practiced at a young age, it's very difficult. So I've heard time and again that in the Grihastha life, we should actually practice improvised poverty. And here, what's interesting is King Malayadwaja, the story has been told, that he is a king. And king means he's living an opulent life. For a king to abandon his opulent life and just walk out of his house and live in a forest, it's really far off. And we have seen time and again in the Shastras. What was another example? Lord Rama, on the day of his coronation, his father actually abandoned him. So he had to walk out to the forest with a simple cloth. He walks out pleasingly. He's not even having a morose face. They say in the Shastras that he was so effulgent walking out of the house that people were just pleasing to look at. He was so pleasing. Rama was so happy to just walk out. So because he's a Supreme Lord, of course. But this is the truth we have to understand, that we have to live in an improvised poverty at this life, or we have to be detached from the mind. Even so. So, and here we can see the wife of Malayadwaja also is following him as a chaste wife. So it is also written in the Shastras, if a husband wants to take a Vanaprastha ashrama, the wife may also follow him if she so wishes to abandon her children. So we see in the translation that the wife actually abandons, she gives up homely happiness despite having family and children. Now this is a higher consciousness where the wife also wants to perceive spiritual progress along with the husband. And we know examples in history like Gandhari, Madri, or Sita Devi and Draupadi, who actually abandoned palatial living and then they took up to Vanaprastha ashram. So, how I also understood was, it is very important that we have a leader like us. Because generally, we all seek authority and we actually emulate authorities. And generally, if you have a king or a leader who follows this principle that he is not attached to material comforts at an advanced age, and he's actually looking towards completely dedicating his life for spiritual progress. For example, Prabhupada had so much, you know, opulence in one sense because he had so many temples. But at the same time, you know, he used to live in temples of New York. But when he comes to India, he was happy to live in a small kutir with, you know, the story that he used to live in a small bhajan kutir with His Holiness Gaurbhavi Maharaj. So Prabhupada was so detached with the opulence. So while I was researching on this, I was thinking, is there any country where there is a leader who runs this country like this? And what's interesting, I was searching for the most happiest place on earth, and I found out that there is a country who actually measure their country's advancement on something called as Gross National Happiness, GNH, not Gross Domestic Product. Because most of the countries measure their advancement based on the Gross Domestic Product, which is a kind of a measure of advancement of a country. This country is called as, you know the country name?
Bhutan.
It's Bhutan. And they have the most contented people in this planet Earth. So I was very interested to know, how do we run this country? And they're not materially advanced, and they're probably the whole country's GDP or the income of the whole country might be lesser than one of the most wealthiest persons on this planet. So then I was researching, I Googled saying ISKCON temple in Bhutan. Now generally this is what we devotees do. Let's see if there is a temple in Bhutan. And incidentally I fell upon a dairy by His Holiness Indradumna Maharaj, traveling, you know, Maharaj's dairy, dairy of a traveling monk. And he actually had traveled to Bhutan. And it was very interesting, it actually was very attractive to me, so I spent a lot of time reading it, and I would want to share that with you today. So, Maharaj was supposed to go to Bhutan, and what's interesting is, not everyone are allowed to get into Bhutan. So if you're a traveler, you can't just get into Bhutan. You have to take government's prior permission. So government is even careful to allow whom to allow and whom not to allow, even for travelers, because they do not want to concoct their consciousness. So they're very careful. It's quite interesting. So Maharaj had somehow, he said, I'm lucky that I got permission to go. And in Bhutan, proselytize or conversion. You know? I don't know what's the word. What's the word, Matthew? Proselytizing. Proselytizing. So you can't convert them. So if they are Buddhist country, you can't convert them. So it's banned in the country. So Maharaj's disciple was asking, Maharaj, you can't proselytize there, so how? Maharaj said, I'm going there to learn. That's what he said. I'm going there to learn and see. It's an old ancient country. I'm going to go there and learn how they run the country. So Maharaj was on the plane. They landed in Bhutan. And as soon as he came out from the plane, he saw the whole city in a very traditional and ancient looking city. And then he saw everyone dressed in traditional attire. The Maharaj said, oh, there must be a festival going on today. And he had a tour guide accompanying him. So the tour guide said, no Maharaj, actually this is the dress they have to wear. King has made a mandatory rule that every citizen in the country needs to wear his traditional attire because they are protective of the culture. You break the culture, everything is lost, because culture is the fabric that keeps everything together. And this brings me back to the question that I see a lot of people from Fiji here. So Fiji is a small island so remote from the country called Bharat or India, and still I can see great exalted devotees coming out of Fiji. We know so many devotees here in Melbourne, and that fabric that holds countries thousands of kilometers apart is the culture. Fiji is such so far away, and yet the culture is preserved, the very culture is still preserved. So it's amazing. Maharaj understood that it's the culture and the king wants to preserve it. And then the next day Maharaj was supposed to travel to a monastery high up in the mountains. And you know, Bhutan is actually bordered by India, Tibet and China. And it's almost near the border of Himalayas. So it's the air there is very thin. So you can't breathe as normally as you can at sea level. So Maharaj was short of breath, and the tour guide said, you will get used to it, because oxygen is low and the pressure is high. So they started traveling to the monastery, and they had to park the car. And then Maharaj looked up a mountain, and they said, and the tour guide said, there's a monastery up there and you've got to walk. Maharaj said, what? Walk? I can't walk because it's difficult to breathe. And the tour guide said, there's no other way. There's no road. There's a tread. You have to tread the path. It's literally a tread. And we have to walk. That's the only way, and we have to walk. There's no street, you can't drive. And Maharaj took almost, everybody took around 3.5 hours to walk up the monastery. And Maharaj entered the monastery. It was a 16th century monastery, and he could see nothing had changed. It was still looking the same. And there were 70, 80 monks meditating inside, sitting in a very nice arrangement. And there was a guru sitting in the center, and they were all chanting Vedic hymns, reading from palm leaf scriptures. And there were two young monks beating some drums, which also looked like a 16th century drum, and there were big cymbals and gongs which they were going on. And everybody were chanting some traditional mantras, thousands of them, and they were going on and on and on. And when Maharaj entered the monastery, the guru asked him to come and sit down and take his seat. So Maharaj sat down, and he took, what do we do? We put our hand in the beat bag, and Maharaj started chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Ram. And like this, a an hour passed, an hour and a half, and Maharaj could start feel the vibrations that he could start get into every syllable of the mantra just because of the atmosphere. It was so sublime that everybody were absorbed in vibrations, spiritual vibrations. Maharaj was enjoying it, and all of a sudden it stopped. And then Maharaj saw two young kids running and putting something in the bowl of the monks. The monks had small bowls in front of them, and there were two kids running and putting a bowl of rice in everybody's bowls. And then the guru ordered to give a bowl to Maharaj. So Maharaj had a bowl, and just a scoop of rice was served. And the whole monk, 80 monks, finished their meal in 60 seconds. It was all time. So they just finished and they were back to business. So Maharaj understood it. Okay, I've got to finish and start chanting. And then Maharaj started enjoying it. And the two guys said, Maharaj, we must leave. Maharaj said, leave? I'm enjoying it. I would like to do it for a couple of more hours. And now this was the most interesting part. The tour guide said, the monks here chant for two sessions. We just completed the first session. The second session is starting. And each session runs for 6 hours. So if you start now, you can't get in the middle. Are you okay, Maharaj? Maharaj said, oh my God, 6 hours, and I've got to take the trek back to the car and then drive the car. I said, we better leave. So Maharaj was a little embarrassed, but he had to go. He had to leave. And he said, it would be rude to get up in the middle. So if you are happy to stick to the next 6 hours, I'm fine, Maharaj. Maharaj got up, and then he paid obeisances to them, and he just was walking out. And the guru signaled Maharaj. And then Maharaj went close to him, and he asked him, what is that in the bag? And Maharaj showed the beads. And then he asked, what do you chant on this? And he said, I chant the Hare Krishna mantra. And then the guru blessed Maharaj with the palm leaves. And then Maharaj went out, and Maharaj's realization that I would like to actually repeat what he had said. He said, I was impressed with the focus they have in the spiritual practice. The reason was, when Maharaj was doing all this, none of the monks even looked at him. There were 80 monks engrossed in their chanting, and when Maharaj even was speaking to their guru, they were just busy with their business of chanting. They didn't even notice him. Maharaj was saying, I was so impressed with the focus they have in the spiritual practice. For 12 hours a day they chant and pray. I would like to have that determination in my own sadhana. Their grit and determination is commendable. Now what's interesting is I then researched about Bhutan. Bhutan is run by the king, although it's a parliament, and he's still the head of the state. And this king has made a rule that if he does not take care of his citizens as his children, the citizens can overthrow him. He has made the rule. And the retirement of the king is around 65 years of age, but he retires at the age of 51. This is the king that is not the current king, but the king before. He retires at the age of 51. I was saying, this is so Vedic. And this gels with what King Malaya is doing here. At 51, you abandon everything. As a king, you abandoning is difficult, right? So that is why I was interested to say, if there is a leader or an authority who abandons at 51 and takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously, then people want to emulate him. And it's interesting that the citizens of Bhutan actually emulate him, and they love the king. How many countries you find where the citizens love their leaders these days? None of them love, because the leaders are politicians. They say, oh, every politician is the same. But here is a country where the citizens love their king. And the reason is because the king is spiritual, and because the king is such an able leader, he can actually drive the population towards it. And Srila Prabhupada always said, forward is backward, backward is forward. The reason, what he meant was, no matter how backward a country is in terms of material advancement, they are spiritually more advanced. Especially in the case of Bhutan, where the whole country, at least majority of them, are monks, and they have around 12 years of training to become a real Buddhist monk. So you can actually read the blog that Maharaj has written. So you can say, happiness is a place, ISKCON. If you Google like that, you will see Maharaj's blog.
Happiness is a place?
Yeah. That's what Maharaj titles the chapter as. So going back from the king and his subjects, we can also see from the purport that Prabhupada moves from the dynamics of a husband and wife to the dynamics between a spiritual master and a disciple. It's not different, because both the relationships are based on chastity. The chastity of the wife actually towards the husband makes her beautiful and worthy. In the same way, the chastity of a disciple towards a spiritual master actually makes it successful. What's interesting, in the nectar of devotion, there are 64 elements of devotion service. What is the first element among the 64? Yeah, the first element is Guru Padashraya. Guru Padaya, Guru Padashrayastasma, Krishna Dikshadi Sikshanam, Vishramhena Guru Seva, Sadhu Vajmanu Vartanam. Guru Padashraya means submission to the lotus feet of the spiritual master, receiving Diksha Mantras, Krishna Dikshadi Sikshanam, receiving instructions and training from the spiritual master. And Guru Seva. Guru Seva means doing, serving the spiritual master. And Sadhu Vartmanu Vartana means following in his footsteps. So these are the four basic, the first steps of the 64 Angas of the Bhakti. And the first one is Guru Padashraya. The first step is to seek this lotus feet of, we all know as when we cultivate, when we are in the cultivation, the first step we seek is the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And what's interesting is, everybody in this material world is seeking an authority. If you see, some people are behind money, some people are behind beauty. What are they seeking? They are seeking an authority. For example, if someone is behind beauty, he gets attached to an authority called a woman. Is it not? If someone is seeking money, he subordinates himself to the process of creating wealth. So we are all seeking authority in some sense. But a spiritual seeker is also seeking a spiritual authority, and that is why we see on the same lines that a spiritual seeker is the search of a spiritual master. Just as when a husband submits himself to his beautiful wife because he is seeking beauty, he gets subordinated by his wife, and he will go a long way to please his wife. Yes? No? I don't know, but that is what we generally see. Because if he is seeking beauty, he will subordinate himself to his wife. So in the same way, we can draw a parallel that we are all seeking authority in one sense. And as long as one doesn't subordinate to the authority, we cannot derive what we want. So for example, in Bhagavad Gita, we see Arjuna, till the second chapter, seventh verse, he did not subordinate himself. Is it not? He went on explaining and expounding his theories of Dharma Shastra, of so many reasons that I don't want to kill my gurus, I don't want to kill my teachers, my uncles, my predecessors. Why are you engaging me in this ghastly warfare? But only when Arjuna 2.7 says, Karpanyatoshopahatasvabhavaha prachamitvam dharma samhoda chetaha Yatresyanishitam Ruhitanme Shishyastehaṁ Sadhimam Tvam Prapannam. As long as he does not surrender to Krishna, Krishna does not speak. Only when he subordinates to his guru, the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna was the relationship of a friendship. Now the relationship switches back to guru and disciple. Only then Krishna starts speaking. So we know that knowledge, just as knowledge flows, just as water flows from a higher level to a lower level, knowledge also flows from a higher level to a lower level. But in this society today, we are trained to be equal, isn't it? These days there is a talk of equality, secularism. Secularism is actually atheism in the garb of equality, if you really observe it. Everybody wants to be secular and equal, but what they actually want to say is, I want to become an atheist or an agnostic. That's what today's education trains children to be agnostic, to be repulsive. Generally we see that everybody wants to be equal. Women need equal pay as men. Men need to be treated as equally as women. Students want to be treated equally as teachers. So there is no respect in that sense. So thereby, knowledge will not flow. So now, even though the knowledge flows, the person who is receiving it will not have the eligibility to receive that knowledge because he has lost it. Because he is trying to headbutt with the teacher. So it doesn't work like that, in one sense. So as long as one does not subordinate, things will not flow naturally. So that is why in the olden, in the Vedic Shastras it had said that one must accept a lower position voluntarily. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi sumichena taroriva sahishtuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One must be, one must meditate, one must think himself to be a lower than a bird. What does this mean? It means that one must take a lower position so that knowledge can flow. And we know the sole aim of a spiritual master will be what? To take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. And one, when one takes a lower position, what happens is, when we take into Krishna consciousness, we tend to bring this material mentality into spiritual life. Everybody is equal. Okay, I've got a spiritual master. So the Shastras say, one must be ready to accept criticism from the spiritual master, even at the cost of being shamed. That is the purpose. And that is the whole purpose of a spiritual master, is to awaken your Krishna consciousness and to destroy the ego that we have. But because we have a material mentality, we've been trained all these years to think equal, to think I'm no less than a teacher. So when I studied in my school, we never called the teacher by name. We never called them. But today they call the teacher by name. There's no respect by the students because they're trained like that in through civilization. So sometimes we bring the same mentality into spiritual life, and that's why our spiritual progress gets blocked. The spiritual master is desiring, but the student is not open. His heart is closed. As long as the heart is closed, the heart not, the knowledge doesn't flow, it just rebounces. So as long as I become receptive to the criticisms of the spiritual master, to the chastisement, then it actually purifies me. But seldom, most of the times we see that it's difficult. And we see in the Canto 3, 23 and 7 that Kardama Muni and Devahuti serves her husband in such a way and then becomes eligible to receive that knowledge from her own son, Kapila Muni. Because she serves the husband in such a way, she becomes eligible for that reception of that knowledge. And that's how she becomes successful. And that is why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says, Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadat nagati kutopi. So, when the spiritual master gets pleased, Krishna gets pleased. And when I receive the benediction of spiritual master, I actually receive the benediction from Krishna. And that's why he writes in the Guru Ashtakam, that one who chants this Guru Ashtakam every day in the Brahma Muhurta, what happens? Have you all studied the ninth paragraph of the Guru Ashtakam? It's an Ashtakam. But the ninth paragraph, there is a blessing. There is a blessing. Srimad Guru Rashtakam Yedad Uchair Vrindavana Sakshat Sevaya Lakhya. So we will get Vrindavan Natha's direct service if one chants this Guru Ashtakam in the Brahma Muhurta. So that's the blessing Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura gives. So we see so many examples like this. And I remember a story which I heard in a lecture. In the Vedas, there used to be a spiritual master. And his way of teaching was very unique. And he was so special, he was so famous, that all around the world people used to come and queue for his teachings. And he used to say, okay, he used to take the disciples and the condition was, you live with me for 1 year. You observe me for 6 months, I will observe you for 6 months. If you are happy with me, you accept me as a spiritual master. If I am happy with you, I will then accept you as my disciple. So he used to test 1 year. And then after a year, thousands of disciples were very eager to learn from him. They joined. And you know what was the first lesson he taught? He said, okay, disciples, you have come. There are a lot of cows in the backyard. Can you please take them to the forest? So all the disciples took the cows. They tended the cows in the forest. They came in the evening. Every day, this was the instruction to the disciples. Take the cows to the forest and bring them back. You know what happened? 1 year passed by. 2 years passed by. By 2 years, there were disciples who started mourning. What is this? We came here to learn and the spiritual master is making us a cowherd boy. I think we should not waste our time. We are wasting our time here. We paid a huge fee for this. We are hexing it from the government as well. There is no hexing at the time. It was free Guru. So many people started leaving. They said, oh Gurudev, I have come here to learn. I am thinking I think 2 years of cowherding has not given me enough knowledge. So I will try to seek it somewhere else. Thank you very much, Gurudev. Gurudev said, very nice. Thank you. Please leave. So people started leaving. Except for one disciple. He said, Maharaj, I am a very dull, very dull fellow. I will continue to do. So 5 years passed by. 6 years passed by. 10 years passed by. And the wife of the spiritual master says, what are you doing with your disciple? You are just using him as a cowherd boy. 10 years has passed and you have not even given him one shiksha. And the spiritual master laughs at him. And then the dull-headed boy comes back after 10 years. He says, spiritual master, it's 10 years now. I don't know if I've learned anything from this, but I seek your blessings. The spiritual master says, yeah, take the cows back to the forest again tomorrow. So he continues like that for another 5 years. And then after 5 years, the spiritual master calls the disciple and he says, your shiksha is done too. You may go. And the disciple is now, he's in a shock. He says, Gurudev, I only know how to tend the cows. 15 years I have served you like this and now you abandoned me. I don't have any knowledge. What will I do? Where will I go? The spiritual master looks at his disciple and smiles. And he calls the disciple and he blesses him. I bless you because you are such a nice disciple. And just after receiving that blessing, all that he's learned for the past 15 years gets awakened. This is called Swayam Vichalita Jnana. The spiritual master opens the door to his knowledge that he's received by tending the cows. And all that knowledge he was supposed to sit and get into a class, he's learned it by that blessing of the spiritual master. That becomes manifest in that disciple. Of course, it doesn't happen these days because... Correct. So, because of impurity that we possess. Prabhupada says this, all these are magical things that will happen in the Vedic time, but probably not these times. So this is a story that I heard in a lecture. So it's quite amazing how the practice was, and one should have the thirst to learn from that spiritual master and wait until the spiritual master reveals it to us. So he will see when I'm eligible to take that instruction. And it's not that the spiritual master will instruct me the highest of everything to say, you're a grihastha now, you abandon, take sannyas. He wouldn't. He, based on the capacity of the disciple, the spiritual master will instruct. So for example, I have seen a spiritual master instruct a disciple to say, don't do makeup. Now that was a very trivial instruction. But I see that the disciple did not make up from that day. Because the disciple understood, oh, this is an instruction there. So spiritual master tests the disciple's capacity to take the instruction by giving tiny instructions like this before. Is the disciple ready to take it? Okay, don't do makeup from today. So from tomorrow, no makeup. The disciple I have seen till date, there is no makeup for the disciple. She's abandoned it. She says, no, Guru Maharaj said, no makeup for me today. From today. So this is taking yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. So ready to take instructions. So tiny instruction was a test. So then, the disciple is ready to take the next step. So these are all tiny. This is what I have at least observed from the instructions. And then coming back to the verse, Prabhupada also mentioned there's a word called madirekshana. Madirekshana means intoxicated eyes. It's very interesting because it's quite a contrast. Why does Vedavyasa write that Maledhvaja, King Maledhvaja is abandoning his wife, but the wife has intoxicating eyes? So what I understood was, despite he being the king, despite he has an intoxicating wife with an intoxicated eyes, means she's so beautiful to look at, he abandons it for a higher cause. He is not attached. What does it signify? It signifies the real strength of a man to not become subordinate to the beauty of a woman. Right? Because the purpose is spiritual emancipation. Krishna consciousness. Not to be shaken by Krishna's creation. Because Maledhvaja abandons his wife, he demands the chastity from the wife, and that's why the wife just bows her head and follows the husband. Now this is grihastha in Krishna consciousness. That the husband respects the wife, that she's beautiful, but I don't subordinate that authority, and the wife respects that strength in the husband, and then she subordinates to say, I will walk your path towards spiritual progress. So this is the observation that I did. And this is the same teaching that Narada Muni is trying to teach King Prachina Barhi, that there, this is the time that you need to take to Vanaprastha Ashrama and you have to abandon these sacrifices that you are intoxicated with. What's interesting is, Prabhupada actually takes this to a different level. He says, if one's eyes become intoxicated upon seeing the deity, he may be called as Madhirekshana. And unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. We have such beautiful deities. We have Shishi Gaudindara, we have Radha Vallabh, we have Jagannath Vallabh Subhadra, and we have Srila Prabhupada. I have to yet come to that level to really see them with those eyes, Madhirekshana. But we also have to understand, what is the value of my seeing? I think I am seeing, is it not? We think we are seeing, but is it really me who is seeing? I can't see anything without the light. So in fact, without the sun, without the Agni, I can't see. So am I seeing it or are they seeing it and I'm just the instrument of their seeing? So in this way, we have to see that we actually don't have any value in these eyes. It is actually Krishna who is making us see it. And we have to see the deities through the eyes of the Guru. The Guru has to reveal the deities through the eyes of the Guru and the Shastras. And if you see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Krishna Rupamrita Sindhu, Krishnanga Sushitala. Krishna Rupamrita Sindhu means Krishna's beauty is like the ocean which can drown everyone. Krishna Anga Sushitala means his body is cooler than the paste of sandalwood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Krishnanga Saurabhya Bhara Mriga Mada Madahar. Krishna is saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Krishna's body is so fragrant that Mriga Mada Madahara, the Mriga who is the deer which smells of musk, is also getting intoxicated by the intoxicating and maddening fragrance of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining the personal characteristics of Krishna. So if we then look at the deities with this knowledge, then we are seeing the deities with Shastra Chakshu, seeing the deities through the eyes of the scriptures. Then one's eyes then becomes intoxicated with the love of Krishna. What's interesting is I was reading, Prabhupada named one of his disciples as Madhira. The disciples were shocked because Prabhupada, Madhira means intoxication. And you're naming your disciple Madhira? So Prabhupada says, now she is intoxicated by the love of Krishna. That's why she is Madhira. So Prabhupada named one of his disciples as Madhira, who is intoxicated in the bhakti of Krishna. So with this, I will actually briefly talk about, today is a very special day again. It is the appearance day of Sri Purushottam Das Thakur. Sri Purushottam Das Thakur was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. He appears in Lord Chaitanya's pastime as one of the followers of Nityananda. But in his brief, in the Goloka Vrindavan Leela, he is one of the top 12 Gopals. So if you see the picture, the Gopals pictures are gone. Now there was a picture here where Krishna is playing a flute and Gopals are following him.
It's been claimed.
If you see there are Gopals who are very close to Krishna and Balaram. There are 12 Gopals who are very close. They are called as Priya Sakhas or Dvadasha Gopalas. And among them is one Gopal whose name is Stoka Krishna. You've heard of the disciple of Prabhupada called Stoka Krishna Prabhu. Stoka Krishna is one of the Gopals who is very dear to Krishna. He's a Priya Sakha of Krishna. And he takes birth as Purushottam Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Leela. And he's a very dear associate of Lord Nityananda. Nityananda's associates, who is the 23rd and the 24th prominent devotees of Lord Nityananda, were Sadashiva Kaviraja, whose son was Purushottam Das Thakur. And he always worshipped Nityananda and Sri Krishna by his heart. So I was also meditating, what is the purpose of actually remembering these personalities? While I was studying and preparing for the lecture today, I understood that Vairi Sadhana Bhaktas. We are following bhakti in the practice by rules. And there is a parallel track of Vairi Sadhana Bhakta, which is Raganuga Sadhana. So in the Raganuga Sadhana, we have to actually emulate some great personalities in Vrindavan. We have to read about them. We have to learn about them. So these pastimes actually help us to meditate on various personalities in Chaitanya Leela and Krishna Leela. So with this, I'll stop here. All glories to Dwadasa Gopalas, all glories to Purushottam Das Thakur, and all glories to whoever remembers the pastimes of the cowherd boys on this auspicious day of appearance day of His Grace Purushottam Das Thakur and the pastimes of cowherd boys. And I'll stop here. If there are any comments or questions or points, we'll discuss with you. Yes, go ahead.
Is that contradictory? Because you said in one sense that men should become subordinate to their wife.
Yep.
But then you said men should become detached from his...
Yeah. So the question is, it seemed like a contradiction that I said men should become subordinate to their wives and men should not be subordinate but actually vouch for higher principles. I'm sorry if I was not clear. I said that all of us seek authority in our lives. Everyone seeks authority. Just as if someone seeks beauty as an authority, he subordinates himself to his wife. In the same way, a husband who is after beauty will subordinate himself to his beautiful wife. But the Vedas say one should not do it. So one should become strong enough to actually become subordinate to a spiritual authority, but not run after these material authorities like beauty, wealth, and things like that. So we see this in the normal material world, that people become subordinate to their wives because they are seeking beauty. But one husband should become strong and not seek beauty in the wife, but should seek beauty in Krishna. So if you see, though the verse says, Madhirekshana is the eyes of Queen Vaidarbhi, Prabhupada takes this as devotees' eyes who are seeing the beauties. So like this, we should start seeing, if someone has a beautiful wife, the husband should see Krishna's beauty in that wife. You say, oh, my wife is so beautiful. Maybe Krishna, there is Krishna's beauty emanating through her. Or Radharani's beauty emanating through her. So one should start seeing Krishna's manifestation in everything that we perceive. And that is what I really meant. So sorry if I was not clear. So I was actually saying that everybody seeks an authority, but one should abandon material authorities and move towards spiritual authority.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
So that's subordinate position would be more of like a material consciousness.
We have to subordinate nevertheless, because we are Dhanastha Shaktis. We will subordinate, because if I want to receive what I want, I naturally subordinate. But in the material world, we subordinate to beauty, wealth, fame, etc. But one really, if one wants spiritual progress, we have to subordinate to a spiritual guru or a spiritual master. So the subordinating principle is true, but whom we subordinate is a matter of informed decision or an intelligent decision that we take to say, I have got a human form of life, and this is a very durlabham manusham janma. So I should subordinate to that spiritual authority who can take me back home, back to Godhead. So the principle of subordination is a fact that my nature as a Tathastha Shakti, Krishnera Jivera Swarupa Hoye, Krishnera Nitya Das. So I'm actually always subordinated. But rather than subordinating to Maya, I subordinate to Krishna. But I use my position in this material world to subordinate to my spirit. And how do I subordinate to Krishna? By subordinating to a spiritual authority, who is my spiritual master. I seek a spiritual master and then I subordinate myself to him. I pray my prostrated obedience. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I put a straw in my mouth and fall at your lotus feet just like a dog. They say, we wear this tulsi mala, so we are actually dogs of Krishna. We are like his pets. And we subordinate ourselves to the spiritual master. And whatever, as we actually read here, that we read these prayers and pay our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and a spiritual master, this we subordinate to them with our body, mind and words. And we take their instructions. Does it make sense for you? Yes, sir.
So, from all this Bhutan story and from all this Madhurekshan story and everything,
yes,
what we as practicing devotees can practice, can you summarize two or three points that we can practice?
If I sing it to me, Prabhu, you should be knowing it, but you're asking me to actually test me whether I know it or not. So I will explain whatever realizations I have or what little. So I should actually make a disclaimer that whatever, most of the things I speak is not my realizations. These are theoretical knowledge. I'm yet to realize many of the points that I spoke. I'm also a student of wisdom. So Prabhu asked me a question to say, we discussed about the spiritual practice that a lot of monks do in Bhutan. We have Madhirekshana being said here. We have King Malayadraja who is taking to Vanaprastha Ashrama. What is our take home in a few points? A take home is, what I understood is, as a Grihastha, from where I stand, my standpoint is, I'm a Grihastha. I have to take my Grihastha life as an impetus to move into Vanaprastha. So life is very short, I have to take it seriously. Every time I see Srila Prabhupada's disciples, I'm amazed by the dedication they show to Prabhupada. Their surrender was so high. I still remember when I read Lilamrita, when Prabhupada and his disciples were traveling in a train from Mayapur to Vrindavan, the train stopped in Delhi and Prabhupada said, "You get down." He told his disciples, "Get down and open a temple here." Now these were not Indian disciples, Indian body disciples. They were disciples from America. They just got out. They just got out without even thinking, "Whoa, hang on. Prabhupada, are you sure?" I don't even think so. They asked this to Prabhupada. They just looked at each other and they just got out. This sort of surrender cannot come just by mental concoction. It has to come from with a very strong, resolute intelligence and determination. And I wish one day I can have that determination for Prabhupada and my spiritual master. So it sometimes amazes me that when can I have such determination. So I have to use my position of my Grihastha to actually reach that position to be strong enough to abandon or to take up the Krishna consciousness seriously, so that I can demonstrate it by my behavior to my family, whom I serve as my wife and my children, and also to demonstrate it to my spiritual master that I'm following his instructions. So the two takeaways is, I should be strong enough, not get into Maya, and I should take my spiritual practice very seriously. So that is what I would summarize it as well. Any more thoughts? Yes, ma'am.
What if the wife is helping the husband spiritually advance to everything? She's like a pillar, she's supporting everything to advance in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They can be supporting to advance. That means they are supporting to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, that's what we see the pastime of Devahuti and Kardamani. Devahuti was subordinate to her husband, who was a devotee, and then she did everything that the wife, a chaste wife, has to do. We have glorious examples in ISKCON. In why we have studied, we have examples like His Grace Vrijan Prabhu and Jagatari, His Grace Her Grace Jagatari Mataji. We have His Grace Sankarshan Prabhu and Her Grace Vishnu Priyamantaji. So we have time and again examples like this, how one should use their position in their dharma and execute that to the fullest extent. And then perfect it. We have examples of Gandhari who served her husband by putting a blindfold on her eyes and serving a blind husband, even though he was not a devotee as such. But because she was chaste to her husband, she derived that respect and power because of her chastity, although he was not husband. And we see the example of Shankarchuda and Tulsi Devi. Shankarchuda was a demon in one sense. But because she was so chaste, her chastity actually took her to a higher pursuits. Not that my husband is a demon, so I'll abandon him because I'm a devotee. But because she thought, okay, I'm a wife, I'll take that subordinate position, but I will make sure I will serve my husband so that I can make him a devotee. And because she had this chaste understanding, just as Srila Prabhupada did not abandon his disciples because they were intoxicated, they were druggies or something. He took all the pains to serve them, to make them devotees. So in the same way, a mother takes all the care to their children, even though the children are not following mother's instructions. So this is very special that only a mother can understand. Probably men can not even think of such a thing. This is compassion.
Does it answer your question? Gangeshwar Prabhu was saying yesterday, it seems very far, but if we are perfect in our sadhana, Krishna shrinks that ocean as just a hoof print in Gangeshwar Prabhu's class this week, if you hear, and he makes it very easy for us. And that becomes easy if you actually see, we say actually that we take the shelter of your divine lotus feet, we sing. It is only by the mercy of Prabhupada that we can actually become easy. As long as we follow his instructions very strictly, we may falter, but we move on, we falter, we learn from it, and we beg to Krishna to give us strength so that we don't commit the same mistakes again and we move on. So that's how I understood it. Yes, Krishna?
Like, I had a question that how is, if you put the straw in your mouth, how is that a sign of being humble?
Okay, two things. The reason they put a straw in the mouth is, straw was, it is called barhi. You know, barhi is a, it is called kusa grass. Kusa grass is something that purifies everything in this creation. So if you want to do puja, you apply the kusa grass to your fingers. So I put the straw in my mouth to say my body is impure, so I'm putting the kusa grass so that, to, because I'm touching the feet of my spiritual master, it has to purify me. So the kusa grass in my mouth is just so that I get purified. Just as someone puts sacred thread or a kanti mala, a kusa grass also signifies kusa, that grass signifies kusa grass. So it's a tradition, and usually you put a kusa grass to purify yourself before you prostrate in front of the spiritual master. Does it answer your question? So, okay. With this, I stop here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.